This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Did you know that parents rank financial literacy as the number one most difficult life skill to teach? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app for families. With Greenlight, you send instant money transfers, set up chores, automate allowance, and keep an eye on your kids' spending with real-time notifications. Kids learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. And parents can rest easy knowing their kids are learning about money with guardrails in place. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey.
Hey everybody, this is Richard Deitch and welcome to the Sports Media Podcast. My producer is Patrick Antonetti. This week, a really, really good podcast. Very fortunate to get these people. We are doing a roundtable on the future of hockey reporting, which obviously, of course, includes what is currently going on with hockey reporting. The guests are Michael Farber, the Hall of Fame hockey writer and longtime Sports Illustrated writer and TSN contributor, ESPN hockey reporter Emily Kaplan, Michael Russo, senior writer covering the Minnesota Wild and the NHL for The Athletic, and Fluto Shinzawa, a senior writer for The Athletic covering the Boston Bruins, and obviously a longtime Boston Globe writer before that. It's a really, I think, thoughtful and smart and informative discussion on the state of hockey reporting in 2022 and where it will go in the future. Don't want to take any more time regarding my usually long intros. Let's get right to the panel on the Sports Media Podcast. All right, as I said at the top, this is a very distinguished panel, and it would probably take 45 minutes for me to do all their resume stuff, so I'm going to try to limit it to a one-sentence stuff. Michael Farber, my longtime colleague at Sports Illustrated, Hall of Fame hockey writer, longtime TSN contributor. Great that he has joined me today. ESPN hockey reporter Emily Kaplan, if you're a hockey fan, obviously you've seen her on television, you've read her work. Again, another former colleague of mine, from her Sports Illustrated Monday Morning Quarterback days. Michael Russo is a senior writer covering the Minnesota Wild and the NHL for The Athletic, also obviously a major domo in Minneapolis where I think he hosts like 47 radio shows, I've been told, or something to that effect. Fluto Shinzawa is a senior writer for The Athletic covering the Boston Bruins. If you're in the Boston area, he's been one of the conduits to hockey probably for multiple generations, obviously longtime Boston Globe writer as well. This is a really distinguished panel, and I'm pleased that they're all joining me today on the Sports Media Podcast. Guys, I want to start with this. It's very open-ended. You can go as long as you want. And let me start with you, Michael Russo, if I can. How would you evaluate the state of hockey reporting in 2022?
I mean, much more difficult, especially at The Athletic, where, you know, the coolness of what we do is just the ability to get, tell great, great stories. And when you have limited access, it just absolutely changes things. I mean, even just, you know, I'm doing a podcast with a player in a couple days, which is awesome that I could do it one-on-one, but I got to make sure that we are measured to be like 20 feet apart and things like that. So, I mean, access is the biggest thing to do this job well, in my opinion, other than just being robotic. And I just think it makes it much more difficult. But if you've done this job long enough and you have good relationships, there are definitely ways around that, which I've had to definitely tap into the last couple of years. But to me, if you have that sort of wherewithal to be able to work hard, to go behind the scenes and get those stories, there's still a way to do it, but it just makes it a lot tougher when everything, you know, as much as we are, there are some teams going back to all Zooms. There are still teams like the Minnesota Wild that give us access to players on one-on-ones if we want it, but it's still all a press conference setting. There's no roaming the locker room anymore, no shooting the breeze with players. It's everybody's getting the same four guys now after games, and it just makes that a lot tougher.
Emily, let me go to you because, you know, access for you is shouldn't really be that big an issue. You work for the one of the rights holder partners. So, you have unique access. But from your perspective, as someone who covers this game nationally, like, what are you seeing? What are you seeing in terms of the stories that are being chosen? What are you seeing in terms of what the public's getting?
I think it varies market to market, quite frankly. I think there's a wide range of, you know, whether it's local restrictions or more helpful or less helpful PR departments where it's definitely not an even playing field. I feel very fortunate to work at ESPN, which is a rights holder, and I'm so aware that I get more access than most. I mean, when we're broadcasting a game, we still get to do in-person sessions with the coaches, you know, riffing, getting background information, all of that stuff that I'm fully cognizant so many beat writers don't get these days. And that's just a shame because I think that is such an integral part of the job. And I also just, I feel for a lot of young writers. You know, I was talking to Peter Baugh, a young writer at The Athletic, and it floored me at the end of last season. He had covered the Colorado Avalanche without, most of these guys have never even seen his face. Like the Zoom on the other end, you know, is black. And that's wild. Like, how are you supposed to form relationships? Not only are you not in person and getting that equity, but even just face-to-face contact. So I think it's really fragile right now. I don't think it's exclusive to hockey. I think, you know, the pandemic has wreaked havoc on so many of our daily routines. But yeah, and as for the, you know, the stories that are being told, I'd love to see more stories. I want us to bring out the life of these players. I want us to get deeper inside the game. But that's always been a challenge in hockey, a sport that the guys are conditioned not to use a pronoun I, not talk about themselves, not to want to open up in that way. And it's especially a challenge now when they can't open their doors or we can't talk to them in that way.
All right, I'm going to you, Farber, and then follow Fluto. Farber, you're not covering hockey on a day-to-day basis. So I think you can answer this question on maybe a little more longitudinal, like what it was like when you were covering the sport day to day and what you're reading and seeing now.
Oh, so when I was picking Howie Morenz as one of the three stars.
that's correct. Right. That's I liked your coverage of the St. Patrick Maple Leafs. They were all
yeah,
awesome.
Well, thank you for that. I will tell one story because storytelling is a primal imaginative act. And unfortunately, for reasons that Mike and Emily have laid out, it's tougher and tougher to do that. I was covering, back when I was in early years at the Gazette, I went down to the story on Gordie Howe, who was then with Hartford and then in his 50s. And I was good because Red Fisher vouched for me, so Gordie was fine. I didn't know Gordie at that point. I was supposed to talk to him. The Whalers were going to Philly. I was supposed to talk to him somewhere along the line. I got bumped on the commercial flight. Teams flew commercial. And Gordie said, well, there's another flight in 2.5 hours. So I'll take that one. So we both got off the flight. Gordie Howe got off the flight. And we sat for 2.5 hours in the Hartford Springfield Airport. And I got my story for the Montreal Gazette. The problem here, you're talking to four people. I had the privilege of working for Sports Illustrated. So I got preferred access because of the great work Fluto has done in Boston and, you know, Mike has done in multiple cities. People around the league know them. They have developed a relationship. And because Emily, who's still relatively new to the beat, works for ESPN, she gets access. So the colleagues who don't get access are at a distinct disadvantage. Where has this led? It's led to more analytic stories because that's the way to go. You have to use numbers. You can't get the people to tell their stories in the same way. And as an old storyteller, I find that unfortunate.
Fluto, you've heard your three colleagues answer this question. You're welcome to take it anywhere you want, whether you want to discuss access or you want to discuss the content that exists now for readers and viewers?
I would say that I'm somewhat concerned about just the future of the quality, just because, okay, you have, I think a lot of people understand the access issues. Okay, that's going to mute interest for some writers that might be thinking about hockey writing or maybe even just sports writing in general. And maybe they're doing something else. Maybe they think, oh, I don't want to sit at a computer all day rather than go to a game and go to the room and talk to these players and talk to their surrounding circles to get these kinds of stories. And maybe they want to do something else. So the access is certainly an issue And I find that that's going to be, I think, an issue in terms of recruiting talent, in terms of getting good writers, talented writers, hardworking reporters. I think there's going to be some barriers there for entry that they might want to consider some other line of business. And where is that going to lead? That's going to lead to a decline in the work that we're all reading and that we're all used to writing. Because I know, just speaking from my perspective, my work probably isn't as strong as it has been before. It's just reality that I know I feel a degree of detachment from the team that I cover just because I don't see them. I'm not on the road as much. I don't talk to as many people. So I'm just, my level of engagement personally is down. And I think that shows in the work. Maybe the readers don't really see that, but I feel it on a personal basis. So maybe that's the way across the league, perhaps. And it's unfortunate, but that's the reality. So yes, we're all trying to figure out alternatives in terms of trying to do work and through other avenues, through other options. But boy, I know my work is suffering. So I worry about the quality of the work overall and the quality of the writing that we're going to be seeing in the future.
I couldn't agree more with Pluto from that standpoint. One of the great parts of doing this job is just hanging out in the locker room, notebook in your back pocket, listening to the chirps, listening to the funny stuff that goes around, and inevitably something comes up that makes a great story. And I just think of the amount of stories that in the last 2 years haven't been able to be told because we don't see all these cool things that are happening in the locker room and hearing all these things. And that, as great as the Minnesota Wild's PR staff is absolutely unbelievable, and they've been incredible here. We still get one-on-ones. We still get access to players face-to-face. But that stuff that they can't help is us just being in the room and just having our eyes and ears open like a lot of good reporters are able to do. And, I don't know if the fans, the readers that read me religiously would notice it as much as I feel it, because I see stuff that happens all the time that the Wild put out on their social media videos and things like that. I'm like, God, if I had seen that happen, that would have been an incredible story to be told. And, you know, even at the Winter Classic, in practice, Kirill Kaprizov scored the Michigan lacrosse goal, but we're all the way miles up from the press box. We're not allowed to be on the field because of COVID. And so that's something that I just never saw until a week later when they put out the video of him scoring the lacrosse goal. And so it's even little stuff like that of just from an access where normally we'd be able to watch practice, and there we're not able to.
I think you raise a great point, Mike, and this predates COVID. If you went into the Toronto Maple Leafs dressing room for the past 10 years, one player would come out. He'd be bombarded with reporters and cameramen, and then another player would come out. But the Wild can do what it wants on its social media. I think the biggest change in hockey reporting is that you in Minnesota and Fluto in Boston, you're competing against the teams you're covering because they want to cover themselves. And this is true of team websites and NHL.com and other state-sponsored media. So you're supposed to be covering these teams, but these teams want to save these nuggets for themselves, which has made your jobs much more difficult.
Let me go to Emily on this, and then I'll go to Fluto. Emily, what stories, in your opinion, are not being covered at the moment, or perhaps not being covered as strongly as they should? What's undercovered right now in the sport?
I mean, the league is undercovered, quite frankly. If you look at hockey media and the landscape, The Athletic does a great job, and it employs so many terrific reporters and writers, but there's very few outlets right now that put that same amount of resource and infrastructure in. I like to think ESPN has. TNT is the new rights holder, and they do a great job on TV. They don't have, a written arm or outlet that really covers them in that way, dedicated besides Bleacher Report, which just seems to be more of aggregation. So in general, I find our sport to be undercovered. But what specific stories? Again, it's the personality profiles. It's getting to know who these players are off the ice. I did a story on Austin Matthews this summer. It was our big cover story treatment. He gave us a ton of access. Again, I'm a rights holder. I'm very aware of, you know, the more preferential treatment that I get. And it just shocked me of how many Americans still have no idea who this kid is, even though he's the greatest American goal scorer perhaps we've ever seen. And that's just, you know, a product of hockey. Mental health stories, I don't think, are covered as well as they can be or should be. I think this pandemic has been so difficult on so many of us, and hockey players and executives and people in the game are no different. And I know they're suffering, and I would like to see us talk about that more. And then the investigative stuff, you know, we talk about Katie Strang and Rick Westhead as, you know, the pillars of hockey investigative journalism, and they do such a great job, but it's really them standing on an island. And I think that's probably just a function of hockey media. We're all stretched a little bit too thin. And the hardest thing to do is to sink your teeth into an investigative story, to get your editors and bosses to buy into the time and resources it allows. And I mean, like, I would love to, you know, sink into a couple of topics or things I hear about. I don't have the time or bandwidth. And I'm trying to do the best I can to, you know, appease all my different areas. And I just wish that there were more people telling those stories, because there's important investigative work to do in this job as well.
Fluto, you want to weigh in on that?
I know, just from my perspective, what I enjoy, or what I did enjoy about what it was like before, is some of the strategy. I found that that's some of the stuff that I don't really, clearly that's meant for TV, and those color guys do a great job. But I enjoy reading that stuff, and that's just stuff that I know I'm not writing anymore, just because that's the kind of degree of reporting that you need to be 5, 10, 15 minutes sitting next to a player, coaches, having them explain to you certain tendencies, situations, explaining what was happening during the game. I know I'm not doing that just because it's not available. So that's the stuff that I miss. I miss writing it. I miss reading that kind of reporting. So I don't know that there is a solution, that perhaps we can work around it through video interviews and through Zoom. But that's the stuff that I'm not reading that I wish I was.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
I want to go to the two Michaels here. We could start with you, Farber. Emily referenced Rick Westhead and Katie Strang. Those are Rick Westhead is a colleague of yours, Michael. Obviously, Katie Strang is a colleague of ours, Fluto and Michael Russo's. And we have seen them reporting on sexual abuse in hockey, hockey culture, mental health issues. And their reporting has really, it feels like it's crossed past hockey into the general public. But I think Emily is onto something. It's I don't know how many other reporters I can tell you or name, like other than those two who have prominently done this. I'm sure there are, but I think me not knowing that sort of says something. So Michael Farber, you covered the sport at a time where, like, you know, machismo was through the roof and nobody ever talked about this stuff. And now you're seeing it today. My sense is, and again, I don't cover the sport day to day, my sense is that Katie and Rick have just touched the surface and that there are so many of these stories that we really haven't come close to hearing about. And the only way we will is, I guess, if places put money towards doing those stories. But Farber, you and I know this at SI. Sometimes you can investigate something for 5 months, it never comes to fruition. You got to pay that reporter and those people 5 months to do something that never becomes a story. How do you, I should have asked a better question, but how do you see all this?
Well, let's start with the two reporters you mentioned. Rick West headworks for TSN, which is not a rights holder. Now, would he be doing the same things if he were working for a rights holder? You know, I somehow doubt it. Would he be, not he would be doing it or want to be doing it, but would he have as free a rein? Now, he did a lot of good stories before the rights in Canada went to Sportsnet. Katie Strang is excellent at what she does. Is everybody else, do other people have the same kind of jam? Willingness, both from a personal perspective and a corporate perspective, to go ahead and pursue those stories. You would hope so, but investigative journalism takes time and money. And even The Athletic, which started out with a certain model in how they wanted to do these stories, has moved towards a more what happened in the game last night approach. So unless with the sale to the Times things change, I don't see you'll be getting much more of what you've gotten from Westhead and Strang.
Michael Russo, did you want to add something there?
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, I think the one point that Emily made too, first of all, to get to Michael's point, it takes incredible courage. Like I don't think there's a person on our staff at The Athletic that's more respected than Katie. And it's because she really takes on the stories that a lot of us either can't or won't do or don't have the time to do. And the one thing that Emily said that I couldn't agree with more is also the bandwidth, like the ability to have the time while you're covering the Wild, but also having to work on all these investigative pieces. There's only just so much time in the day and energy and ability to do that before you run yourself right into the ground and just fry your brain and fry your fingertips. And you know, the one thing that she said that popped in my head was the Derek Bugard, when he passed away here in Minnesota, I was absolutely all over it. I wrote every single story at the time. It destroyed me as a beat writer because I knew him personally too. He's one of those people that I used to go and lean against his locker and wait until he basically wrote a story for me by, you know, something happening in the locker room. And then John Branch came along and really fleshed it out into a meaningful, impactful thing to write about what led to his downfall. And I remember reading John Branch's book and reading John Branch's coverage at the time and almost feeling ashamed as the beat writer that covered Derek Bugard, because I never delved into that. But the thing that Emily said that really popped in my head is that a lot of us that also have your day job, quote unquote, is you don't have the time to put that effort in. And I think that's, I think we have been so streamed down as a media business where there just aren't a lot of us anymore, that a lot of stories do fall by the wayside just because we don't have the time to write them, which is what makes people like Katie Strang so important to covering this league properly, is because she can delve into a story that a lot of us cannot.
I want to start with Emily here because she covers the sport nationally and probably has been in the most, I don't even know what the, there really is no press box at the moment, but at least the most arenas in, over the last 12 months. So she'll have certainly a sense of this. But Emily, I want to talk about the people who are covering the sport at the moment. The Professional Writers Association, the hockey writers, pretty much remains overwhelmingly white. I do know that gender has gotten much better over the however many years you want. There's obviously more women covering the sport than probably were doing it in the 70s and 60s. How would you evaluate where the sport is right now regarding people of color covering it?
Yeah, I'm inspired by just how many young women I see who have broken into this business and are so passionate about it and are so talented, and they're not there just to tick a box. They've earned their right to be there. And that has been the biggest development I've seen, even in the 4 years I've covered the sport. I feel like I've seen progress. As for people of color, unfortunately, it's reflective of the sport itself. It's predominantly a white sport. There's so many socioeconomic reasons for that. It's something that I know the league is working so hard to change. And there's people like Kim Davis in the league office who have made it their lives work to diversify hockey and make it more reflective of our society. But the truth is, it's still a white sport, still a sport of privilege. And I do think that the people that cover it reflect that. And I'd like to see, you know, just different voices from just different backgrounds. It's not necessarily about the color of your skin or your gender. It's more so about what life experiences you have. Like, I think one of the reasons I did so well coming into this is I covered the NFL, and then walking into a hockey locker room, I was constantly asking, well, this looks different, or why do they do it this way? And because I had a different life experience, I noticed different things. And I want people with tons of different life experiences, diverse, to walk into our beat and challenge things and ask the status quo or notice things that are unique to them, because those, I think, are the stories that will shine through and will resonate with readers. So we have a lot of work to do.
I agree. Like Ryan Clark at The Athletic, it's like anything to do with race or color winds up on his platter. And, you know, sometimes I really feel for him, because a lot of us lean on him for expertise in helping shape the way that we write things sensitively. I remember I did when Matt Dumba went and kneeled. I can't remember the exact situation, but it was either before or after Matt Dumba kneeled at the bubble. I remember talking to Ryan Clark and saying, I need to have you as a co-byline here, because I just don't feel comfortable writing this on my own. I remember I did a podcast with a roundtable when all the George Floyd stuff was happening here in Minnesota with JT Brown, Eustace King, who's an African American that lives in Los Angeles. That's a player agent for a lot of huge players. Dr. Boyd, the first African American doctor in professional hockey here in Minnesota. He's the Wild team orthopedic surgeon. And Jared Spurgeon was actually on the podcast as well. And I just remember how absolutely nervous I was going into that podcast and calling up Ryan Clark and asking him advice on how I word things and everything. And it makes it super, super stressful, because you just feel like you are, you know, when I can only imagine what Ryan feels whenever he gets a phone call from any of us for a sensitive topic to try to get his expertise. And it's because there's just, you know, there's only a handful of African-American or men or women covering this sport.
Did Fluto or Mike, did you want anything?
Yeah, I want to point out that going back as far as I can remember, hockey was the most welcoming of sports, professional sports, to whoever wanted to cover it. Back in the 1970s, when I was at the Record in Hackensack, New Jersey, and around the Rangers, the New York Times, the Daily News, and Newsday all had women covering the beat. Now, maybe because hockey was a relatively minor pro beat compared to baseball. But my understanding was they were welcome. And there's a story that the New York Times woman walked into a dressing room. This is at a time when Major League Baseball was trying to keep women out of clubhouses. And Phil Esposito looked at her and called Red Fisher over. He said, Red, who's that? And he said, that's so-and-so from the New York Times. And Phil said, wow, she's got balls. And that's what life was. But hockey, because it is undercovered, as Emily noted, is dying for coverage. And it is so open, and people are more than willing to explain the game. So this is my experience there. And unfortunately, we've lost some really good people who could still be working in it. And Mike worked with one in South Florida, David Neal. I mean, that South Florida crew with Mike and Brian Begain at the Palm Beach Post and David Neal, Miami Herald, David Neal is a person of color. I mean, that they were among the best group of guys covering any team that I've seen. So it's open. But I want to know, when you see something on Saturday Night Live, let's do this hockey thing. You know, and everyone thinks that's funny. What do you guys think? Is that funny, or is that something about the state of hockey coverage?
That's a good question, Michael. I was just still thinking about David Neal, because I'm telling you, like, what you said really popped a lot of things in my head, because I look at David Neal from the Miami Herald, as you mentioned, African-American man. He still works for the Miami Herald, just no longer in sports, as like the reason why I was able to exceed down there at that time, because he took me as his competitor, essentially under his wing. Like, he taught me a lot of how to do this job, how to book trips, how to get into buildings for the first time, which is super intimidating when you're a young 20-year-old and never traveled in your life, you know, all that type of stuff. And he knew more in one hand about hockey than most hockey writers I'd ever met, just from his days growing up watching the Indiana team in Indianapolis, covering, you know, watching Gretzky and all those teams, the Racers. So I don't know. It just popped in my head. And it's amazing to me that there just aren't more people like him in this sport.
Fluto, I'm going to start with you on this next topic. Did you want to add anything on this before?
Well, yeah, I would guess that it's a complicated sport, right? There's ice, there's sticks, there's all this equipment that a lot of people are not familiar with. So I think it could be intimidating for writers. I know just as a hockey parent now, I found, okay, I got to know the press box and the room and everything. I was fine with that. But then I as a hockey parent, I wasn't sure, okay, do I go in the lobby here? Which do I go into a room with a kid? How do I buy the equipment? All this stuff that I had a little bit of trouble navigating. So I think there's just a lot of obstacles that are involved with the sport that can be challenging for people who aren't familiar with it. So maybe that's one reason why it's tough to get your foot in the door as a writer. It's a complicated sport.
Fluto, let me stick with you. And Emily, you're welcome to sit this one out as someone who's paid by paid by ESPN and obviously appears on their airwaves. But I am curious, it was significant news in the United States that ESPN and Turner are now the longtime rights holders taking this over from NBC. And there's always been sort of a thought, rightly or wrongly, that you need ESPN to grow your sport. If your sport doesn't get prominence on ESPN, it gets left behind. Whether that's true or not, that's just, I think, in the United States, sort of a thought process, or certainly was, at least in a pre-streaming era. From your perspective, Fluto, what kind of impact do you think ESPN and Turner will make when it comes to interest in hockey content?
I have to think it can only help, right? Just because of the footprint that both platforms have, the reach. I think NBC was great. And you could see it was pretty cool by the time you got to the playoffs. Okay, there's a game on NBC, NBC Sports, whatever their other networks were. I think USA and maybe CNBC. And that was pretty neat in terms of kind of the saturation that they provided. But I don't know the TV business at all. So just speaking as a watcher, I have to believe that that's going to help just the casual viewer that is familiar with ESPN and maybe not TNT to that degree, but I, from what I understand, they did a great job and have done a great job with basketball. So why wouldn't that apply with hockey? So, and then the dollars that they're incorporating into the league with the rights fees, that can only help as the league and the teams try and gain some kind of traction coming out of this. It can only help. So yeah, as a viewer, as the casual viewer, it can. I'm sure that's a powerful, powerful name, ESPN. So that can only help.
Farber, I want to, as someone who's been on television as much as McDavid and Gretzky over the years, you're a perfect person, of course, north of the border, but you're a perfect person to ask this, because you know, you've lived the eras of ESPN having the package, losing the package, NBC sort of growing the sport. And then you always get this question, obviously, as someone who's been prominent on Canadian television, where this is not even a question. Like, no one's asking if TSN or Sportsnet's going to grow the sport. The sport is what it is here.
Well, yeah. I mean, and this is the point. The sport is kind of the sport. You're not going to change it. And as Fluto pointed out, it's an expensive sport. And I hesitate to use the word, but I will anyway. It's a niche sport. What impact will ESPN have? I'd say slightly more than zero, unless the price can go down. We talk about growing the game. Well, how's the game going to grow with climate change? It's tougher to get ice outdoors in the winter, so you're not going to skate. The sheer cost of it. The only impact I see ESPN having, and I hope I'm wrong, but I don't think I am, is if other ESPN people make it important. If it's suddenly on, pardon the interruption, and all the other talk shows, if they are talking about it, making it part of the conversation in the way that the NBA, another ESPN product, is part of the conversation, and the NFL, which is also an ESPN, is a national part of the conversation. Unless these people are doing it, it's not going to happen. I mean, look, hockey remains exotic. You and I worked in a building roughly a mile from Madison Square Garden. Is that true, Richard?
It's about right, yeah.
And the New York Rangers have been in business since the mid-1920s. And there were so many decision makers at Sports Illustrated who viewed hockey as been around 100, it's exotic. And until there are more people like Tim Collishaw, Jeff Schultz, important national writers who say, yeah, this is great. And the hockey, other than when there's some spasm of irrationality, you know, if that can be a daily feature and an in-depth feature on these ESPN parade of talk shows, hockey is not going to grow.
Emily, I want to, by the way, Emily, get Kaprizov on all the ESPN shows you're doing. There's your sort of assignment to help grow the sport.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road, the steeper the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend? Or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
I got a couple more for you guys, and then I'll let you go. I want to ask you, Emily, about analytics and the role of analytics in the sport, and at least for this conversation, the role of analytics in stories, both in print as well as on television. We have seen the revolution in baseball, where it's really commonplace now to see analytics pop up in the most general interest stories, let alone there are sites dedicated specific to analytics, which have a ton of fans. I wonder how you see this, the interest. Will this grow? And also this relates into gambling too, where analytics and data, in theory, can play a massive role in gambling. You know, you bet on how much ice time Austin Matthews gets versus Mitch Marner. Or, you know, you bet on how many miles like one of the players skated during a game. Like, it sort of opens up to a lot of interesting things. But the real question is, does the hockey fan want this?
It's a really good question. You know, like when I'm in between the benches for a game, I have two monitors in front of me. One is a replay monitor and the other is both teams. It's a green light in front of each guy's name. If he's sitting on the bench, red light if he goes into the room because they're wearing a tracker. It says the shift length, the shift time, the miles per hour on the shot or the speed. And those are all tools to help me and the broadcast and storytelling of the game. So I don't think that's an accident, right? I think this is where we're going. I think fans want this. They want, if there's information available, that's our society. We want it all. And as the league formalizes its relationship with Vegas and big sports betting companies, you're going to start seeing that folded into coverage too. And I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing, because I do think casual gamblers perhaps start tuning into hockey games, realize that they love the sport, and then become lifelong fans. I think that is a thing that absolutely can happen. So I think there's an appetite for it, and I think we're doing it. You know, I'm someone who got into this because I hated math. I was so bad at math. The only thing I could do was write, and that's why I became a sports writer. I'm realizing that's a very obsolete way to think. You've got to think about these things, and analytics departments are just growing in hockey front offices. Like, we're not steering away from information, we're leaning in and embracing it. And then I just wanted to comment on the previous conversation too of my employer and ESPN. All valid points. And I just think the one thing I would say is these things take time. We are signed a 7-year deal and we want things to be better right away. But I've noticed the small changes around the horn, a show I'm on. Hockey highlights now make it into the rundown more often than they did last year because we have clearance for it and we can show it. And now it's a talking point to promote the games that we have on our network. You know, when Stephen A. Smith did that bit about Connor McDavid or the Seattle Kraken, like, it got people talking. And we also have a show called The Point, which is hosted by John Buccigross, which I just feel like hockey fans have never had that dedicated hour a week to storytelling and taking us inside the game. We ran 12 minutes on Jack Hughes, a hockey player, on TV. Do you know how rare that is to get 12 minutes on a hockey player on ESPN? And it was just a look inside his life of what it's like to be a 20-year-old competent kid breaking into the league. He was so fun. He gave us a ton of access. So we're doing these things and we're getting there, but I would just implore people to have a little bit of patience because we're still figuring it out.
Let's, Mike Russo, I'll go to you and then we'll go to Fluto because obviously you guys are writing on a daily basis. Where do you see analytics, Mike? You know, you have a very popular readership when it comes to those who are interested in the Wild. So you must have your own, for lack of a better word, sort of internal data or anecdotal data about how people like or do not like stories where analytics are prominent.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. So I just did a double byline story with Shayna Goldman at The Athletic on Jonas Brodin. It was a very analytical piece. And everybody on Twitter knew the parts that I contributed to and the parts that she contributed. That's how Wild fans have grown to know that I am not an analytics guy. And it, mostly it is. It's because of laziness. A lot of it's because of intelligence, lack thereof. I did a math equation the other night where I tried to figure out how many penalties Kevin Fiala took in a 5-minute span. And of course I got it wrong. That's the problem that sometimes I have. So at The Athletic, I mean, to be a little bit more honest, you know, we have so many analytics writers, that a lot of times I've just, again, out of laziness, just sort of leaned on them, where if I was probably still at the Star Tribune, I would have to adjust and use it a lot more. But we are going to have to use it a lot more. Hopefully the information that Emily was talking about that really is not broadcast to the beat writers, only to the broadcasters and things like that. Hopefully we have better access to that, where we could dive into that stuff and use it to sprinkle into our stories to add more context. But I'll highly admit that I'm a dinosaur in this area. I still like to write, you know, I'm a newsbreaker. That's my specialty. I like breaking news. I like reporting. And then the third thing I like to do is write. I'm not a wordsmith like Michael Farber. In fact, I used a Michael Farber line attributed to Michael Farber in my Winter Classic report the other day, where it was the hype meets hyperthermia line that he used during the Heritage Classic many
years. That does sound like Farber.
Yep. You know, that's the type of line that I would never be capable of coming up with. But so I go that route and then lean on people to sort of help me there. But it is absolutely. I mean, what I've seen in the last 5 years in the development of analytics and as Michael mentioned earlier in the podcast, analytics writers and some of these young guys and girls that know everything about every single detail of analytics and how it could help complement writing, I think is, it could only help. And it's just another adjustment that we've all had to make, as hockey writers. You know, when I first started covering this league, you had only one way to burn a player, and that was in print, in the newspaper the next day. Now, if I got a player mad at me, it could be from something I tweeted, said on a podcast, said on a radio show, said on a TV show. That, you know, it's a lot of reasons why sometimes it's a little harder to develop a relationship with a player, because you have all these different mechanisms now to talk about the sport, where years ago it was just writing. And so it's just another way that sort of sports journalism in the last several years has evolved into what it is now.
Fluto?
I think it's tricky. just because I know as a reader, boy, my attention span has decreased, maybe because of age, but I start getting into these stories and I like numbers. I think they tell a powerful story, a richer, a deeper story, and help people understand what's going on to a greater degree when you're talking about points per 60 or Corsi or whatever, high danger. I like all of it, but I think there is nuance in terms of using it and applying it in our writing. As a reader, if I come across a story that's just full of numbers, I don't make it past the third graph. It's just, so I think, and I know I have to remind myself, okay, I have all these numbers available, but what does it mean? And how does it complement what we're trying to convey? And I know I struggle with it at times. I'm sure other writers are better at it than me. So I think it's tricky. I really think there is an art, a practice, probably best practice degree of trying to incorporate the numbers, because otherwise, what are we doing as writers? We're trying to get readers engaged and to be reading from the beginning to the end. And I know as a reader, I haven't made it that far with some of these number stories. So that's a trick that all of us writers have to incorporate with our writing.
Farber, did you want to add anything to this before our last topic? Go ahead.
My ophthalmologist has told me never to look at another athletic heat map again of a rink. I love information, and this is more information. And Fluto's right, if you can figure out a way to use it, but people have to understand it. And if you can define Corsi without people saying, oh, Corsi, let's see. Oh, plus Corsi is good, but what exactly is Corsi or whatever? I'm not sure we're ready for it. High danger scoring chances. That's obvious, and I think people can understand that. But next level stuff, I think, is going to, as Fluto mentioned, is going to lose more people than it's going to draw in. Tell good stories. Good stories, well told, four words. That's all you got to do. It's up to you to figure out how to do it.
I'm Mark Chapman. Welcome to the Planet Premier League podcast. Each week, Cesc Fabregas, Nader Manua and myself talk all things Premier League.
As a player, you don't have time to talk. No. You don't have time to make a plan. You just need to deal with wave after wave after wave.
We watched Coach Carter and he said, oh, afterwards, the game's just about doing this for your teammates. And I remember looking around halfway through the film and half the squad was asleep.
Planet Premier League. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, last question. We're going to end on this. I'm going to start with you, Michael Russo. So you got it's tougher for you because you got to come up with it first. I want you to take me to 2032 and tell me what it will be like to report on the National Hockey League 10 years from now.
Oh, my God. First of all, I just had a panic attack thinking that I might still be covering this league in 2032. I'll be writing about the bright future of the Minnesota Wild after their 20th straight first round exit, maybe.
Well, you said you're writing, so that's a good sign.
Yeah, I know. I'll be dictating into my phone probably. God, I just honestly had a panic attack when you said 2032, 10 years from now. In all honesty, I hope is that we have not sort of opened the box of never being around these players again. I mean, that's what I hope. I just hope that we get back to inside that locker room, so we could tell stories. But I do think there's going to be a lot more, even The Athletic, I think we're going to do something that I'm working on in the next little while. It's going to be sort of our first guinea pig into, I don't want to give too much away, but it's going to be a lot like what Emily Kaplan did today with Jack Hughes, or like what the New York Times, the better thing would be probably what the New York Times does to complement their written articles, where we have a documentary person that was out with us. Working on a story that we are going to tell the story, but there's going to be a doc that's going to kind of complement it. And it's going to be very New York Times Magazine esque. It's going to be really, really cool. I think there's going to be a lot more of that because, as Ludo said, the attention span is something that I think, especially at The Athletic, where we have so much content that a lot of people, and I'm the guiltiest probably at the entire company, of writing too long. And I think there's going to have to be ways where we go. I think we've gotten to a point, I know I have, where I've forgotten how to write tight, and really every story doesn't need to be 3,000 words, which for me, people joke when I get to 3,000 words, that's when I start to breathe. You know, we've got to get to a point where we tighten things back up to like a newspaper style, because people just don't have the time or the patience at all to sit down and read, you know, 10, 15, 3,000 word stories. So I think that's where we're going to evolve as The Athletic, is getting down to being a little tighter, but also complementing things with, you know, really cool features. But to do that, you got to get access. So, I mean, I hope that things stay the same. I hope that there are newspapers still exist in 10 years. You know, it concerns me the way that these organizations, some of these companies have thinned down. We're really lucky here in Minnesota to have a great newspaper in the Star Tribune that's still as healthy as anything in the country. But there are some markets that I go to that I pick up a newspaper and I'm like, why did I buy this to read the game story? Because it was clearly filed at the end of the second period and things like that. So I know that's sort of all over the map, but, you know, for me as an old school hockey writer at this point, you know, I hope things don't change too much and we just get back to being able to just be around these awesome players and really tell their stories.
Pluto, same question.
I think it'll be kind of getting back to this wave of, well, right now it's mobile, right? It's probably people not reading on their computers, certainly not reading in print, which as a writer, that it kind of bums me out, because you spend all this time crafting sentences and making paragraphs work. And okay, do I use this word or not? And probably people are just scrolling by it on their phone. So it's all this time that is perhaps could be applied elsewhere. So it's probably going to be more of that. I see data visualization being big in terms of graphs and numbers. And I think it's just quick hits in and out. Just that stuff that really grabs the eye and gets that part of your brain that is tuned for engagement. I think that's where we're going. The long form, unfortunately, it's some of our strengths. I'm really not sure that our brains are trending in that direction. So little bits and nuggets and flashes and something that will apply and go hand in hand with the technology that will be developed by them, which I think all goes away from the beauty of the words and the sentences and the paragraphs and the pages, which makes me sad and it's bummed out. But I think that's the direction that I see, unfortunately.
Farber, and then we'll end it with Emily.
Well, in 10 years, I'll be watching Emily as the host of ABC's National News. She'll be anchoring. So
she can't afford the pay cut, Farber.
Well, you know, that's all I got. I don't plan necessarily to be watching in 2032, because when man plans, God laughs.
All right, Emily, we'll end this with you. This doesn't necessarily have to be what ESPN or Turner are going to do. This is sort of, again, a very large, like, what's the reporting of the sport going to be in 2032? I'll tell you, when I was sort of conceptualizing the question, my first thought was, well, are we going to actually be able to go into a locker room and interview the players in our locker room? Or is everything going to be on some, like, you know, giant, like, Hunger Games screen where we press a button and we ask them questions? Nobody really knows. You think 10 years is a short amount of a long amount of time, but it's not. It's really short. So how would you answer that question? And we'll end on that.
Well, as an executive of the Professional Hockey Writers Association, I feel very important to get this on record. The league has assured us in normal times, we will be welcomed back into the locker room. We have been told that multiple times. If there is a change of heart, that will be highly disappointing. So we are all optimistic, and maybe I'm a little bit of too much of an optimist, that things will restore to normal and we will get those in-person interactions. And just, you know, when I think of the sport as a whole, just the people in it, the people covering it, I think we're going to evolve. And I honestly think that we're going to get to a point where we talk about hockey players in the same way that we talk about NBA players in the NFL. And we're covering some of the petty dramas and we're talking about them on First Take and things like that. And I think hockey's ready for it, because this young generation, you know, I'm referencing this piece of Jack Hughes just because it is so recent and we published it last week. But here's a 20-year-old kid who's just putting himself out there, and he doesn't mind, and he likes it, and he's not shying away from the attention. And I think that's the way the culture is going. And I think that's just going to be great for our sport, because it will draw in that more casual fan. I do think there is going to be a culture awakening, or it's going to be difficult or uncomfortable for a lot of people in hockey because they're not used to being covered like this. You know, they're more used to being able to control their own narratives and keep things into a smaller zone. But overall, if our mission is all growing the game, that's where I see it going. And I think we can achieve it in 10 years.
Yeah. Just one thing, Richard, one thing that came up in my head too, is I just think also with social media, I think a lot of players, what I worry about in 10 years is that they're going to sort of cut out the middleman, you know, not talk to the beat writer anymore and all that, because they can control they could sell themselves with their own narrative on social media and things like that. So that's one of the things that I am a little worried about, because I've seen it more and more and more where it's just, you know, I'm writing an article responding to what one of the players tweeted or put on Instagram or things like that. And we're starting to see that, I think, on a more and more basis. And I just think in the next 10 years, it's just going to continue to go, you know, tenfold, as the new generation of young kids that are growing up with TikTok and putting themselves out there on social media are going to just, that's not going to be abnormal to them to just continue to do that, social media wise, as they get older and older and eventually wind up in this league.
Michael Russo is a senior writer covering the Minnesota Wild and the NHL for The Athletic. Fluto Shinzawa is a senior writer for The Athletic covering the Boston Bruins. Emily Kaplan is a ESPN hockey reporter. You can also see her on many of the shows on those family networks. Michael Farber, Hall of Fame hockey writer, longtime Sports Illustrated writer, and TSN contributor. This was a really, really good panel. I appreciate all your time and insights, and I think this helps inform NHL viewers and fans on what's going on now and maybe what will be what they'll be expecting in the future. Thanks so much today for joining me on the Sports Media Podcast. Appreciate it, guys. Thank you. All right, I want to thank everybody on the panel for a great conversation, great insight, and follow all those people in their various places as well as social media. Really, really thoughtful and smart people for sure. If you head to the Sports Media with Richard Deitch archives page, you will hopefully find some stuff that you liked. The previous podcast before this, we did a piece on Major League Baseball letting go of Ken Rosenthal that featured Rich Eroli, and a media discussion with Chad Finn and myself, including whether Urban Meyer will get hired again by a network. Before that, Fred Gadelli, the executive producer of Sunday Night Football, a conversation on John Madden's legacy. Gadelli was the last producer for John Madden. And that was a great podcast. He just really had some great insight into what made Madden who he was. We had the Nexus of Sports and COVID with Bruce Arthur, Donovan Bennett, and Amal Delich. ESPN's Ryan Clark on how to build a sports career post playing. And then just go down the list. Hopefully in the archives you'll find some stuff you like. Rebecca Lowe, Mike Green, and Ian Eagle came on together. Pam Oliver, Chris Jericho. So a mix of conversation about sports media, as well as interviews with people who are in sports media. If you like this stuff, again, it really does have meaning. Please leave us a 5-star review and a note about what you like in the podcast. As always, want to thank Patrick Antonetti for his hard work on this podcast. Thanks so much, Patrick. Thanks to everybody, Cadence 13. And mostly thanks to you for listening. We'll see you soon on the Sports Media with Richard Deitch podcast.